The streetlights come on. It's getting dark. She's supposed to be home before the streetlights come on. She wasn't home yet, so I'm thinking she's just out there playing with a friend. She never came home.
She should be playing with a friend. She should be going to school and enjoying herself. Not strangled, murdered, and treated like a piece of garbage.
Seeing her laying there smoldering is tore up. It's one of those cases that never leave you. And Stanley's making sure of that.
There's no doubt whatsoever in my mind or heart that they have the right man.
He looked at and or processed 10,000 items of evidence and never found anything that connected Jennifer and Stanley.
I mean, I like cheese, but I'm not a rat. I like kids, but not like that.
You are listening to Suspect Convictions, a podcast from WVIK and Scott Reeder. I'm Lacey Scarmana. Before we get into the details of this week's episode, wanted to let you know that Stanley Liggins wants to fire his defense team. In a motion filed this week, Stanley Liggins is asking for another lawyer, citing fundamental disagreements about pretrial and trial strategy with his public defenders, Derek Jones and Miguel Puentes. The motion says the attorney-client relationship between Stanley and Derek Jones, quote, appears to have completely broken down. The motion did not name a potential replacement to take over the case, but it says the Davenport Public Defender's Office cannot adequately staff the case unless Derek Jones acts as counsel. If the judge approves this motion, the appointment of another lawyer would postpone the trial, which is now again scheduled to begin May 22nd in Waterloo, Iowa. There will be a hearing on this motion on April 20th. But back to this episode. Last episode, we heard some of the testimony Kent Simmons gave during a pretrial hearing. Kent is the lawyer who handled Stanley Liggins' appeals, and the defense called him as a witness to explain how he came to find some of the reports that hadn't been turned over to the previous defense teams. So we heard Kent Simmons talking about these reports and how they could have been used in either of Stanley Liggins' first two trials. Kent Simmons is not a lawyer in this case, but he's been working for 23 years to overturn Stanley Liggins' convictions. Bill Davis, the prosecutor in those first two cases, has said that he respects Kent Simmons. In fact, Kent was Bill's first law clerk. But Bill gave us some insight into Kent's courtroom strategy.
He presents the case big city style. Go in and accuse everybody but his client. Accuse the prosecutor, accuse the lawyers, police, accuse everyone but his client.
Again, Kent Simmons isn't representing Stanley Liggins in this trial, but on the witness stand during the hearing, he did try to expose various flaws in the police investigation and the prosecution. First, Kent talked about Sarah B. Klinczyk, a witness who came to him saying she saw a white man at the scene of the fire. Sarah told Kent the man was wearing a hat at the time. News footage from Jennifer Lewis's funeral later showed her stepfather, Joe Glenn, was wearing a similar hat.
She told me that a few days after the crime, she had seen television coverage of the funeral of JL, and that this man who was walking with JL's mother at the funeral was wearing what she believed to be the same hat.
Defense attorney Derek Jones asked Kent Simmons more questions about this funeral footage.
Did those funeral videos show any other clothing that's relevant to identifying Joe Glenn's involvement with this case?
Yes, and that would be the black leather jacket.
Was there anything distinctive about the leather jacket depicted in the funeral videos?
In the funeral videos, you can see flowing fringe on the black leather jacket.
Had Roberta Cadera provided information concerning someone wearing a black leather jacket with fringe?
Yes.
And that information was known to the defense team at the time of the first and second trials?
Yes, the defense found it on their own.
Okay. And just if you could summarize what Ms. Cadera's testimony was concerning the black leather jacket with fringe.
Ms. Cadera and her husband were actually driving past the scene of the fire on September 17, 1990, and as they were on 12th Street, I think taking a left onto Myrtle, Ms. Cadera in the passenger seat saw a man running away from, a man with long hair running away from the fire, and I think the way Lindbaum put it, at a high rate of speed, and the man had long hair and a black leather jacket.
Did she describe it, fringe on the black leather jacket?
I don't believe that was in the initial report, but it was in her testimony in both jury trials.
Ken Simmons singled out one person in the Davenport Police Department that he believes was the reason certain information didn't get turned over in the Stanley Liggins case. That person is Don Schaefer, who at the time of the investigation was a lieutenant in the Davenport Police Department. He eventually became police chief, and he's now retired. Before we get into some of the accusations made against him, I should say that we have tried to reach out to Don Schaefer several times for an interview. In fact, we talked to him briefly off the record outside of his home, but he says the prosecution has asked him not to talk to any media before the trial. Scott Reeder covered the police department at the time of Jennifer Lewis's murder, and he interviewed Don Schaefer several times back then.
I remember him looking like the Hollywood version of a police officer. Always physically fit, short blonde hair. He was very, he could be intimidating. And that's not particularly surprising. You know, that's part of what police officers do is they intimidate. I mean, but as a reporter, sometimes I found him a little bit intimidating to deal with. I always got the impression he did not, dealing with reporters as a part of the job, he did not particularly enjoy doing. I also remember that he would, I remember driving up Brady Street in Davenport one day and like looking out my window of my car and there's this black Corvette passing me. And I go, well, that's a cool car. And then I realize it, Don Schaefer's driving it. And I mentioned that to somebody and they said, oh, that was a seized vehicle that he's allowed to drive. And yeah, I thought it kind of reminds me of Sonny Crockett in Miami Vice, you know, driving around in these fancy sports cars.
So that black Corvette, Jim Hammes remembers it too. Jim was a polygraph operator for the police department. We heard from him back in the third episode when he talked about polygraphing Stanley Liggins and Joe Glenn. Scott talked to Jim at a restaurant last summer. And Jim says there were perks to working for Don Schaefer.
Well, yeah, because with Schaefer, Schaefer got everything he wanted, you know. And everything Schaefer wanted, his guys got. You know, they had take on their own car. You were on the job 2 years, and you had your own car you took home. I never had a car to take on all the 33 years. You know, but Schaefer got this through. Hell, Schaefer drove a black vet.
Yeah.
You know, and you think
I remember that.
And you think anybody in the Detective Bureau could drive that if we're short on cars? Oh, no, can't drive my car.
But I'll also say this. I mean, you know, I've been a reporter 30 years, and I've spent most of my career as a political reporter covering state legislatures. And so I've been lied to a lot over the years. And when somebody lies to you, you tend to remember it. And I was thinking about Don Schaefer. I was trying to remember my interactions with him. I can't think of a single interaction that I've had with him where he was less than truthful. He was not always forthcoming, but I don't ever remember him lying to me. Now, you can don't think take that as faint praise either, because there are a lot of people within the different police departments that I covered at that time who wouldn't hesitate to lie to you about something. But I can't point to something that Schaefer said to me that wasn't true.
And Scott talks about the state of the police department at that time.
The Davenport Police Department, at the time of Jennifer's murder, was very much in turmoil. It was a department that had a number of difficult incidents. You had a shooting that happened in Vandeveer Park, a very beautiful park in the middle of Davenport, involving a police officer there were a number of people who raised questions as to whether it was a legitimate shooting, whether the evidence matched with what the patrol officer said happened. The case was taken before a grand jury in the state of Iowa to be investigated. There were hundreds and hundreds of people in the community that showed up for Back the Badge rallies to back the police officer named Randy Willems. And you saw bumper stickers all over the community that said Back the Badge. There was a lot of tension in the department. People had very strong opinions one way or the other whether this was a justified shooting or not. You had that going on. You had another shooting involving a police officer firing his weapon into a pickup truck at a stop sign. And the guy in the pickup drove away and he was very afraid. And I actually had a police detective call me up and say, as a reporter, and say, "Hey, Scott, this guy who was involved in the shooting, he's hiding from the police right now, and I think you should come over and interview him. He came to me because I'm friends with him, but you need to talk to him." I said, "Well, Dave, I'm happy to talk to him, but why don't you just, you're a police captain, or excuse me, a police sergeant, why don't you just bring him into the police station and explain what happened?" He goes, "It needs to be in the press first, because otherwise they may charge him with something." And so I went and interviewed him, and I thought that was telling, though, that you had a veteran police sergeant that felt like it needed to be told, the guy's story needed to be told in the press first before the department got a hold of it.
After the first two trials, Kent Simmons discovered that the witness who had testified that she saw taillights near the scene of the fire was a paid police informant. The evidence showed that she had started working as a confidential informant the year before the first Stanley Liggins trial, but both the witness and the police department insist she was never paid in relation to the Stanley Liggins case. Kent Simmons testified that he doesn't believe that.
What is the basis for your belief that the paid informant was paid in connection with Stanley Liggins' case?
Well, there was evidence that I received from the DCI in my defense of that police officer that showed that Schaefer was getting cash funds out of the Street Crimes Vice slush fund at the Davenport Police Department. And he was doing so directly after each of Mr. Liggins' jury trials.
How much money was withdrawn from the slush fund after the 1993 trial?
I don't remember which was which, but I believe one was $200 in cash, and then the other one was $300 in cash. And that was the nature of this slush fund. It was cash that was kept in the Street Crimes Vice unit.
What's the purpose of a slush fund?
Well, and I had always advised my client to refer to it as petty cash, but he always referred to it as the slush fund. And it's just whenever they would need cash in a hurry, that's where they would get it. I think it would include payments to informants who were always paid in cash.
Were there ever any receipts presented for the money withdrawn from the slush fund after the 1993 and or 1995 trials?
There was, and again, I don't remember which jury trial the receipts were offered by Schaefer as to why he needed the money. I do recall that the receipts he came up with did not match the amount he had taken out.
Was more taken out than would be accounted for by the receipts?
Correct.
We interviewed Kevin Murphy, who was a detective in the department at the time of the Stanley Liggins investigation. We asked him if that sounds like something Don Schaefer would have done at the time.
Could you see him doing something like that? I mean, we're giving money to somebody that's going to testify against in a trial and just, you know.
Well, that's a tough question to answer. I'm sorry.
Then his wife walked in the room, but we came back to the question, and he reiterated that it was a tough one to answer.
Anyway, we were talking about Schaefer.
Do I see him doing that?
Could you see him doing something like that? Would it be out of character? That's an awful long pause, Elmer.
That's a tough question, Scott. You know, it's just... I think I like to hold off on that question until after the trial.
That's fine.
But he did explain the so-called slush fund system for us.
I didn't like the way they were set up. It was set up to begin with. There's no audit system. I mean, you could, they bring in the cash, you know, tray, and then the signed receipts for the confidential sources. And you go, okay, they paid out, $1,000 since the last audit. Okay, they're $1,000 down. But, you know, it's just, I know when I was in Vice, there was you had a $200 flash money in your pocket in case you were just kind of stumble across something. You had money that you could buy whatever, you know. But if you had anything bigger than like a 200 or 250 purchase, you set it up for down the line when you get more money out of the system.
Kevin Murphy worked under Don Schaefer, and many officers saw Kevin as Don's protege, so to speak. But Kevin and Don had a falling out several years ago.
I pray for him every day. He's just a unique guy that it is what it is.
Dave Struckman was another officer who eventually became a captain in the department. He retired in 2012 after a career spanning 44 years. Dave says Kevin Murphy got into some trouble at the end of his career.
To put it in some of a perspective, I missed my job eventually since I retired. We had to retire because of age. It's a mandate. I miss most of the officers, but I don't miss the politics. And that's the main thing that overshadows some of the inner workings of any organization. More so in a police department.
Dave started working in the Davenport Police Department in 1968, and Don Schaefer joined a couple years later. They both worked as crash investigators at one point and rose through the ranks together. Dave says he can't say enough good things about Don Schaefer.
But as far as integrity, honesty, and investigative skills, there's nobody better. The only negative I can say about Don, and I certainly mean the only thing negative, is he's stubborn. And that's one of my characteristics, too. So we butted heads that way. He's very complete. He's very, I don't care what he's done, he's going to give it 125%. And maybe I sound like a Don Schaefer follower, but I've worked with him. We've been in a lot of cases together, both, in uniform or when he was in street crimes and I was in patrol as a sergeant, that we, hairy situations, and I have a lot of trust in Don. I trust him with my life. So, the negative thing of saying he's stubborn. He's hard-headed sometimes.
And retired Davenport Police Captain James Van Fossen worked with Don Schaefer for 30 years.
That he was under my supervision, I would trust him with his honesty and his dedication to the department with my life. He never, in all those years, never did I ever have a complaint of any wrongdoing as far as anything that he did in his role as a police officer. He was above and beyond the norm. Quite truthfully, he was an outstanding officer.
And he says Kent Simmons' accusations about Don Schaefer paying a witness to testify and withholding evidence would be very uncharacteristic.
You know, a guy with the career that he's had, starting from the ground, working up to chief, and never having a blemish on his record, to have this type of thing said that you explained to me is not only unheard of, it's really disheartening.
In fact, Scott County Prosecutor Mike Walton also took issue with how Kent Simmons framed Don Schaefer's actions during post-conviction relief.
Your motion for limited remand to the Iowa Supreme Court, where you stated that the Honorable David E. Shainthaler found in the first PCR that Lieutenant Donald E. Schaefer of the Davenport Police Department, DPD, thwarted that process by not turning over 77 reports to the county attorney. Isn't it correct that what Judge Shainthaler actually found was, thus, without asserting any allegations of wrongdoing on the part of any person or agency, it is obvious to the court that certain reports were, quote, suppressed, close quote, for whatever reason?
That sounds like what Judge Shainthaler found, yes.
That would be a more accurate description of his finding regarding the suppression of the reports.
It would be a quote of his ruling, yes.
Much more accurate than what you pled.
Depends on what accurate means. This is an argumentative pleading that incorporates facts from the record.
That is not a fact that he found Donald D. Schaefer did not turn over the reports.
No, but that fact was established by the record.
You could have said that the record, in my opinion, establishes that. You chose to say he found that. Correct?
I would never say in my opinion in a motion.
Mike Walton says many of the accusations and conclusions Kent Simmons made on the stand are inappropriate and aren't based on facts. So he argued Kent should not be allowed to take the stand during the trial in May. But defense attorney Derek Jones countered that argument by saying Kent Simmons is in a unique position since he has worked on this case for more than 20 years. He said Kent Simmons would be used as a fact witness only. Scott County Judge Marlita Grieve denied the defense's motion to allow Kent Simmons' testimony. In her ruling, Judge Grieve writes, "If the witnesses mentioned in Mr. Simmons' proposed testimony testify, then there is no reason for Mr. Simmons to testify to the same thing. His testimony could only be seen as an attempt to bolster other fact witnesses and would be improper. Further, if the witnesses Mr. Simmons mentions do not testify, it would be inadmissible hearsay for Mr. Simmons to testify to what they said or what he did in reliance on what they said." So basically she's saying the witnesses he mentioned, like Sarah B. Klingsick, are free to testify during the trial, and Kent Simmons would not be needed on the stand to reiterate what they say. So a jury won't hear the testimony that Kent Simmons gave on the stand during the pretrial hearing, but his statements could indicate what strategies the defense might use during the trial. Production support comes from Alfredo Monteca. Big thanks to Colin Thompson and Cast Media for our online presence. And thank you to WVIK CEO Jay Pierce and the WVIK staff. All archived audio was generously provided by WQAD-TV Channel 8.